National headlines and the local stories you care about. WLBB Carrollton News Talk 1330 FM 106.3.
Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. Happy Columbus Day. I'm Steve Graddick, your host, and delighted to have you with us. We've got a very exciting program this morning. We're on Facebook Live, and you'll see why that's important in about a minute or so. We've got in studio John Davis, Director of Maintenance with LibertyFoundation.org. He's also with Aircraft Enterprise at West Georgia Regional Airport. We also have Colonel Ray Fowler. Is it Lieutenant Colonel or Colonel?
Lieutenant Colonel.
Lieutenant Colonel. And he's also with LibertyFoundation.org. I'm going to give you a little bio on Lieutenant Colonel Ray Fowler. And he flies the F-16 and he flies the F-35 Lightning with the Air National Guard. Civilian pilot, a pilot for Delta Airlines. He has over 13,000 flying hours. Ray is actively involved with multiple flying museums. We're going to talk about that, hopefully someday soon at West Georgia Regional. He's found throughout the country flying at air shows in a variety of different types of historic World War II fighter and bomber aircraft. He was called to active duty in January 2003 as part of Operation Iraqi Freedom. And in September 2004, 2006, and 2009, the unit again was deployed to Iraq in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. And during these deployments, Lieutenant Colonel Fowler and his unit were on station above Iraq performing overwatch flights and air support. I guess that's the no-fly zone.
Yes.
And in continuation of the mission to rebuild the country, 2014, the unit received a presidential activation for a six-month deployment to Afghanistan for Operation Enduring Freedom. And he was tasked with close air support for U.S. and Afghan special forces. And we're going to talk with John about the warbirds. I'm going to let him kind of introduce all that to us. But some of the warbird aircraft that Ray is qualified to fly are, get this list, P-51 Mustang, P-40 Corsair, FW-190, Boeing B-17, Boeing B-25, C-47. That's going to what we're going to start off talking about this morning. P-38. A Messerschmitt 109, and now he can add the XP-82 to the amazing list. So I want to talk about the XP-82 a little bit too, but there's so much to talk about. But the reason that we're really here this morning, and I'll let Lieutenant Colonel Fowler kind of start us off, it was, I guess, just a week ago. At West Georgia Regional Airport, there's a C-47, which you can see if you just drive down Airport Road, and if we got that up on the Facebook page, you can see what it looks like. It was the DC-3 military version. Is the C-47, and it was activated last week. Pilot was John Hess, another Delta captain, and it provided a relief effort to the hurricane victims. So with that intro, Lieutenant Colonel Ray, Fowler, if you would, give us that story of that local rescue or relief effort.
Good morning, and thanks for having us. So the way this happened, John Hess was supposed to come in this morning, and unfortunately he's flying for Delta today, so he was hoping to have the schedule off. But John and Fran are, two of our, top volunteers, and I was actually on the West Coast, so when the hurricane came through, and we were already scheduled to do an event up in Virginia Beach with the airplane for the Virginia Beach Military Museum up there. John has his own airplane, an AT-11, so like everybody was, their hearts are like, how can we help folks in, the hardest hit areas of Georgia and North Carolina? So John had already taken his airplane, an AT-11, down to South Georgia and delivered supplies, knowing that we had this event coming up over the weekend. Well, I think it was kind of like last minute. One of the other volunteers, Jim Stevens, out at the airport said, hey, we've got this, our C-47, it's empty going up to Virginia. Why don't we put the word out and see who's, if we get any interest at all? And so within 24 hours, I think he put that in social media, and it just exploded. So everyone called up and said, yes, we want to help. And then that kind of started to steamroll in the expanse of 24 hours. And as it turns out, ended up loading, 1,200 to 1,500 pounds of supplies here in Carrollton for people that just brought out supplies, you know, and flew those, and then took the airplane to Falcon Field, where a whole another group came out, which I had not even heard of them, the Cajun Navy, I guess, whoever they are.
I've heard of them. Yeah.
So they came out and they loaded the whole airplane.
Yeah, they started
absolutely
there.
So, yeah. You know, it's just amazing, what social media can do for, bringing out people in need. And so we loaded that entire airplane. I say we, I was gone. I kind of felt bad. I was sitting in good weather in Utah while they were loading the plane to go do this. And loaded the airplane up, went to Vidalia, Georgia, and dropped all the supplies off in Vidalia. And everybody was so thankful, to get that, especially at that part where they really were still, very much behind in having supplies. And this is diapers and drinks and, everything you can expect, chainsaws, what people brought out and donated is just pretty staggering. And John, you could probably talk to that. You were probably helping load some of that as well.
I really was. It was just amazing. Like I said, less than 24 hours, our community just stepped up and people just kept coming. And people came after the plane even left. They're still bringing stuff, which we had other planes going out from the airport. We just loaded those, on those planes. It was just amazing, the stuff. Like I said, we had axes, generators, brooms, stuff that I didn't even think about that they would need.
And then how far I understand it, after it was unloaded, it headed to Virginia Beach for the air show you mentioned, and then to Asheville.
In
Virginia Beach, they were doing their own drive. So before we left there, they loaded the plane up again and came back. And we stopped in Rutherford, North Carolina, then to kind of help both areas. And I think total, we probably had, 8,000 or 9,000 pounds of stuff.
Absolutely. In fact, up there, that was what was, the same story. When they put the word out there, we actually ended up having, more supplies than we could put in the airplane. So we had to be very careful with the weight and balance of the airplane to make sure it was loaded properly. We had so many supplies. So the pictures are pretty amazing, for bringing the airplane back. And, that community obviously was, kind of devastated. That's just north of, northwest of Charlotte, where they dropped those supplies off. And, again, just an amazing story for us to add.
We did a story recently on the Burland Airlift, and as I recall, the C-47 or the military version of DC-3 was the first aircraft used for the Burland Airlift. So tell us a little bit about the history of this particular C-47 at West Georgia Regional Airport, because you can see it as we showed a picture of it just driving down Airport Road. Give us a little history of this one particular aircraft. It's really amazing.
And I think I can answer that. Yes. So Liberty Foundation was started by Don Brooks. So Don bought this airplane so he could do the Greenland Expedition. So if people have seen that in Georgia, so Pat Epps and Richard Taylor both went up for the Lost Squadron that were lost in Greenland in World War II. So they had six P-38s, three B-17s, all brand new airplanes crashed on the ice cap in 1944, all to be left. The crews were all rescued, but all the airplanes were, covered in ice. And, when they went to recover these in the early 90s, they were 270 feet in the ice. So Don Brooks was part of that expedition. He went up there and put this DC-3 on skis, which is pretty amazing, and actually invented the golfer that went down to get the P-38 out of the ice. So he was there to recover a B-17. His father was a tail gunner in a B-17, so it was his kind of mission to put a B-17 back in the air, and that was his first attempt to do it. But unfortunately, the B-17s were like 4 feet tall. They were totally crushed under the ice. Mm-hmm. So they did bring up parts and pieces, but that did not get him any closer to a flying B-17. So that airplane, he kept that airplane, and then as we did get a B-17 flying, the Liberty Bell, and we flew it up until it was damaged in 2011, but the foundation itself, we really didn't use the C-47 much up until recently, where we're like, we take it to events, we do the World War II parachuting drops with it, but and we do flight training with it, but it's just a wonderful airplane.
But, keep but it this at West particular Georgia. Aircraft was at D-Day.
This airplane towed a glider on D-Day, which it's
That's
a
amazing.
real deal veteran airplane. So yeah, it's pretty fascinating to get into. On any given weekend to get in these warbirds, kind of the stories they can tell. But it's a real deal.
Describe for those who don't know, towing a glider at the landing of Normandy. What was that like?
I cannot imagine, especially the night landings, in a glider. Had to be just unbelievable. But the airplane was actually with the Royal Air Force, and that's why we have it painted in a U.S. paint scheme now, just to honor the the jumpers in the U.S. That were at D-Day. But yeah, it's amazing that the airplane was there. And Don actually took the airplane over on the 50th. And actually some of the guys that were in there late, the earliest, you know, the youngest guy was in his late 70s that jumped out on the 50th anniversary of D-Day, which is an amazing story in itself.
I think before we go to our first break, I don't think anything epitomizes the courage of these young soldiers to be in a glider made of wood, as I assume, going about, what, 110 miles per hour for a crash landing and, you know, being shot at going behind enemy lines. I mean, how, with no real protection.
Zero. And there's a display of one of the gliders in Granite Falls at the museum up in Granite Falls, Minnesota, a beautiful museum there. And I was just looking in that glider just a few weeks ago, and yeah, that's not a place I necessarily want to be. Of course, I don't know that I'd want to be jumping out and over D-Day either with the pretty hostile area. But
and only be 19, 20, 21, I mean,
when we fly these planes today, even every single time we fly it, you still kind of get a little, it just makes you think, you know, taking off. You're like, God, these guys were so young, not knowing if they're coming back. It just a new appreciation for those guys.
We got to take a break. We're going to come back, talk about Warbirds and Liberty Foundation, a museum of West Georgia Regional, et cetera, with John Davis, Director of Maintenance, LibertyFoundation.org, and Lieutenant Colonel Ray Fowler, call sign Hollywood. But first, these words.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
Oak Mountain Academy is an innovative school of academic excellence celebrating over 61 years. I'm Patrick Curran, head of school, inviting you to join us on the mountain to see our mission and vision in action. Academic excellence, a faith-based environment, and dynamic opportunities are just a few of the reasons our families choose Oak Mountain Academy. Academic scholarships and tuition assistance are available. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Good morning. Welcome back to Community Voice. I'm Steve Raddick, your host. Delighted to have you with us. John Davis, Director of Maintenance, LibertyFoundation.org. Lieutenant Colonel Ray Fowler is with us. Both are with us this morning. So we talk about a potential museum at West Georgia Regional Airport and just a lot of things. If you know anybody that has any interest in aviation, please share this program with them. We're also on Facebook Live. John, tell us, since you're Director of Maintenance, you work on these things called warbirds. For those who don't know, what is a warbird?
It's really any plane associated with the war, any war, really. We focus on World War II with the C-47, the P-51, and many others. But to me, it's kind of, I get a unique side of it. I get to fly them, but I also get to work on them and tear them apart, inspect them, maintain them. It's just really neat to see how they were thinking back then. It's really easy to work on. Everything was made for the war. You know, you're damaged, let's get it back in the air really quick.
Mm-hmm. So it's really, for that. Yeah.
It was. It's mm-hmm. easy to work on. I mean, in a sense.
is an analogy, you know, we used to work on cars with spark plugs and rotors and carburetors, and now you can't touch one because they're all computerized. Is that a fair analogy?
Yes, exactly.
As someone who flies a super computerized aircraft, be it for commercial and or military, you fly the F-35. How does that compare to some of these warbirds where you fly both? I mean, what kind of experience is to fly both?
Yeah, and I get that question a lot. You know, it's really, it was more of the person in the airplane in World War II because there's nothing to protect the pilot as far as the automation. Like the F-35 really flies itself. I mean, you can pull as hard as you want and not do, and the airplane will protect you and say, I don't think I'm going to give you any more than what I can give you. Whereas obviously in the P-51 or the fighters of the day, they if they pulled too hard, the airplane would uncouple and go out of control. So, you know, you really had to have more skill, I would say, from a hands flying skill in World War II, because those airplanes had no automation. Now the F-35, you know, like you can imagine, it's got a lot of guardrails to keep the pilot safe, and you really focus more on the automation and the mission. So the flying's kind of secondary, I would say, in the modern, you know, fourth and fifth generation fighters, whereas, you know, really the flying and fighting was primary in those airplanes, because you know, you can't really stall, you know, a modern fighter. You can just pull as hard as you want and it'll...
Too much money involved.
I guess a lot of money involved. But like John was saying, one of the reasons we're able to keep flying these airplanes after 80 plus years is they're so well built, but they're also very reliable and very safe. So, you know, to some degree, you know, the dispatch reliability on the C-47, I think, is in some degree better than an F-35, just because there's so many computers on that airplane and so many things that have to work and go right for it to fly. And it's
F-35 is a fifth generation.
It is fifth generation, yes.
But, John, on all these big old warbirds, it seems like they have these giant radio engines. I guess they all do. I mean, what's it like to work on one of those big honkers?
One word would be messy.
Really?
Very messy. They like oil, and they like to leak. I mean, the big joke is if it's not leaking, it's out of oil. But no, it's fun. It's unique. It's just different. You know, and we always look for volunteers. If someone out there needs, you know, has a lot of past experience, please bring it. We love to help. Even washing the airplane is a task. You know, so we always look for volunteers. And you know, if anybody just wants to come hang out or look at it, I'll be glad to show it to them.
Tell us now, we have the Liberty Bell in Douglas County, and we hope to get that fully restored. Give us a little bit of the story of that.
Yep, so we flew that airplane in 2004, so I was very fortunate to go down and do the test flights on it. And we flew it up till 2011, and actually John Hess, the same person, was doing the relief flying. You know, they were flying along and ended up, we had a secondary airplane, and there was actually a small fire in the wing. So he did a spectacular job and landed the airplane in a field, you know, and the fire trucks met the airplane, and that airplane would have been flying again in very short order. However, the fire trucks decided not to go out to the airplane because they said it was too wet. So it just sat there and slowly started pick up steam, and it was very badly damaged due to that. Again, he probably could have flown it to an airport, but they made the perfect right decision to put it on the ground and, you know, make sure that they got away from the airplane. And we're rebuilding it in South Georgia. So we've made a lot of progress. It's on its gear down. Most people don't even know we're rebuilding the airplane, but it is down in Douglas, Georgia, and we'll hope to fly it again in 3 years. So just like anything else, it's a lot of time, effort, and money to get the airplane back up and flying.
What caused the fire?
So still not known, mm-hmm. Basically. There's a turbocharger behind that engine, and it's like, you know, I have not heard of it happening. It's a very rare thing for that to happen in any airplane. But, again, very serious issue, and the airplane did what it did in World War II. It protected the crew and landed safely. And, again, it was sitting there on its gear and no issues. I think we would be flying it today had the fire trucks been able to come out. And their defense, it was a very wet. They had a lot of rain up there, and they're just worried about getting their fire trucks stuck. So, so really, it ended up being a successful result. It just, the airplane was so badly damaged, we were working on it getting flying. So hopefully we'll have that airplane here in West Georgia in the next 3 years. It's just a matter of finding enough money to get it flying.
I pulled up a little of the history of the Flying Fortress. Apparently, there were 12,732 B-17s produced between 1935 and 1945. They were also used in Korea, and Israel used them in the war of 1948, and they were even used during Vietnam. Let's see. Fewer than 15 of the bombers can still take to the sky today.
And really, that's been pretty much cut in half now, because
really,
it's got so expensive for the airplanes, the insurance. So a lot of museums have decided just to ground the airplanes and keep them on display. It's kind of like a classic car. These airplanes get more and more valuable. There's a certain amount of time where you say, I think I'm going to leave it in the barn and not fly. But we're a flying museum. That's our mission. So we want to keep the airplanes out on the road. But it's an amazing airplane, very iconic.
Well, we talked about the glider and the courage of the service men in the in the gliders, but similarly in the Flying Fortress. I was privileged to fly in one. It was on a tour in Marietta. And this thing is, with all due respect, it's slow.
It is slow. I mean, the B-17 was obsolete in World War II. It was, you know, really 30s technology. So by the end of the war, in 44, 45, non-pressurized.
Yeah.
I mean, so you think about how hostile working environment, you know, a crew of 10 would go up into the, you know, high 20s or low 30,000 foot range. So it was, you know, 35 below, heated, electrical heated suits. And like you're saying, very much a target. You're just flying straight level waiting for the next flak or the next airplane to be shot down by enemy fire. So
and all the fighters at the time, I mean, they're doing four times the speed. I mean,
absolutely. And so, yeah, there are fighters and there are targets. They were definitely a target. But, of course, they called it the Flying Fortress because it had the all the defensive capability of the 1350 caliber guns around it. And they would fly in a very tight formation so they could, you know, truly try to protect themselves. But, yeah, you were a sitting duck for that. And, you know, it's staggering to think of the numbers of all those built, like 58,000 crewmen just in the B-17 were either, you know, killed or prisoners of war or they were missing in action. You know, it was it's just unbelievable. Every time an airplane went down, a crew of 10 went down.
They went deep into Europe, into over Germany. And
daylight bombing. They broke the back of the German, you know, war machine by daylight bombing. But, you know, obviously they paid a tremendous cost for that.
All right. Well, we're going to take another break and we'll be back to wrap it up. We'll talk a little bit more about the Liberty Bell and hopefully a museum in the future and give a shout out to John Hess for doing the relief effort with the C-47 at West Georgia. And we'll be back with more after this.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
The AP Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined advanced placement curriculum track to earn a series of distinctions upon graduation. This journey enables academically prepared students to pursue college-level studies throughout 17 AP courses in 5 subject categories while enrolled at OMA. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Graddick, your host. I don't know about you, but I'm enjoying this program. We got Lieutenant Colonel Ray Fowler, call sign Hollywood, and LibertyFoundation.org is the website. We got John Davis, Director of Maintenance, and we're talking, I've said multiple times on this program that the West Georgia Regional Airport is the undiscovered diamond of West Georgia. So just imagine, if you would, for all your family and aviation enthusiasts, if we had a museum at the airport. Either one of y'all can address this. If we had a museum at the airport, kind of where would it be located? I mean, it's a large airport, and we got a lot of hangars, and we got a lot of things, but there's still a lot of space left.
We're looking at that. We're looking at ideas, trying to draw out ideas, come up with plans, get investors, donations, anything, and just kind of looking at the whole picture. And we're going to get with the airport and kind of get the best spot for us and the airport and ease of a location easy for the public to get in.
Have you brought it before the airport authority yet?
We've mentioned it a little. We just need some better plans first before we go, you know, and make a presentation.
Okay.
It's a huge investment. I mean, it's going to be probably $3.5 million for the footprint. Obviously, a B-17 has 103-foot wingspan. So if you put a P-51, B-17, B-25, C-47 in a hangar, you have to have a really big hangar. So we rarely get to put them all inside. So that's really the biggest challenge is the funding to make this happen.
But, and then you've got, and you kind of referenced it, you've got to have funding to keep all the aircraft up, and if you want, keep them flying. I mean, it's a big project.
Liberty Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit. I mean, we survive strictly from the donations. So we are able to give rides in the airplanes, which is a great way we support them. But we would love to have a home. It's kind of selfish, you know, flying for Delta Airlines in Atlanta. I don't really want to go anywhere. My wife's a Delta pilot. She's actually working right now. She's flying today. So we want to stay in West Georgia. We'd love to build it here. This would be a perfect place for it, especially as everything kind of migrates west and as the community comes west, it'd be a great place.
Do both of y'all live in Carroll County?
Yes.
Okay.
We do.
Oh, how about that? Okay. What's she flying?
She's on an Airbus. So we're both on the Airbus. So.
Uh-huh. Okay. Is she a captain, a first officer?
She's a first officer, and I'm a captain, so we get to get in the airplane and fly together every once in a while, which is pretty cool.
With this long, long list of warbirds that you're capable of flying, and John, have you worked on all these type of aircraft, or do you specialize in particular aircraft?
I don't really specialize in any of them. We just work on whatever's broken.
It's good to have a humble guy.
Have the P-51 and C-47 in my hangars now. And we just keep them flying, whatever it takes. And we have resources we can go to, you know, if we have a problem or need an expert or something in one area, we can call around and figure that out.
We're going to need to wrap it up. But I think this is important. When we've had the EAA, like Young Eagles, day on, and we've had some guy named Barry Davis on.
I know him.
I think I vaguely remember him. I mean, it's real. This thing, this kind of stuff, really can inspire young kids and young people for a career in aviation. I guess y'all have seen that over the years.
And it is so needed right now. I mean, just like most industries, a lot of kids want to be involved with airplanes, but they don't really know what's the pathway. How do they do that? So, yeah, certainly the EAA or any of these programs or museums. I mean, young kids come out and volunteer with us, and then, you know, there's a variety of people that are our volunteers that are in the aviation their whole lives, so they can be mentors for them and kind of put them on the path. So, you know, I think it's the greatest job in the world. You know, I can't believe people pay me to fly airplanes, so it's kind of, especially in the military aviation, you know, I do the civilian and military, so it's a great option for people to do that. And we want people involved with Liberty Foundation specifically because that's how we're able to keep these airplanes flying. It's all based on volunteerism.
Tell us a little bit more, because we're going to have to wrap it up. We've got a website, libertyfoundation.org. Is that the only place they need to know in terms of to learn more?
That's the best place to start, you know, because they can get, you know, we're a small group, so they'll probably get to me or they'll get to John's wife, Fran Hess. She kind of is the boss to run the show in that. So get to us, and we would love to see you out. And even without the museum in West Georgia, the airplanes are there. We'll meet people out and show them the airplane. Yeah. And they need to come out and take a flight with us, because that's really how we support the airplanes. We'll put it together and come out and go fly.
Even if they just have an interest and no experience and no real involvement in aviation, they're still welcome?
They're
just
welcome.
Come out and we'll show them around the plane and get them involved.
And West Georgia Regional Airport or Mount Zion International is located where?
My address is 378 Regional Airport Road.
Okay. So
it'll come straight to the airplane.
Kind of north central Carroll County.
It's just south of Bremen.
But it serves Harrelson and Carroll County.
Right.
So that's West Georgia Regional, and there's an airport authority. Well, thank y'all so much for coming in. I've enjoyed it enormously. John Davis, Director of Maintenance, LibertyFoundation.org. Lieutenant Colonel Ray Fowler, also Liberty Foundation, Delta pilot, and F-35 pilot. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, and thank y'all for listening. Go out and make it a great day. You're in Tune 2, WLBB, Carrollton.